Now, just so everyone knows that we're recording, I'd like to welcome everybody to the March School Council meeting for Howard Public Juniors. And thanks everybody for taking the time. Before we get started, we will do our land acknowledgement.
As we gather together here at Howard, on behalf of Howard Junior Public School, we acknowledge the sacred land on which Howard operates. It has been a site of human activity for 15,000 years. This land is the territory of the Huron-Wendat and the Petun First Nations, the Seneca, and most recently the Mississaugas of the Credit River. The territory was the subject of the Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, an agreement between the Iroquois Confederacy and Confederacy of the Ojibwe and allied nations to peaceably share and care for the resources around the Great Lakes. Today, the meeting place of Toronto is still the home to many Indigenous peoples from across Turtle Island, and we are grateful to have the opportunity to work in the community on the territory.
Great, thank you, Jen. So before we get any further down, has everybody read through the meeting minutes or looked at the recording from last month's meeting and approves? Or is there anything there that anyone wants to add? No? Okay, so motion to approve last month's meeting minutes. Okay, so Sam, are you motion?
I am. I'm good. Sorry, I will do first motion.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
All in favor?
Okay, so now we will have the principal's update from Esme.
Great. Okay. So what I want to do is just take a few minutes to sort of explain maybe more detail how we do our public health reports and how we get the information for positive COVID cases. So now we're on our third case. And really though, it's like been two bang, bang, like one was March 11th and now one was March 21st. But the one before that was October and was just kind of a one-shot deal. So I don't know if they're going to come maybe more frequently or not. But given that we put in extra cohorting in place and extra strategies in place for safety, we're not expecting that. And what I can say about both of these cases is that they were from community spread. So they were not obviously from within the school. But one of the things I wanted to explain is now Susie and I have been through it a few times, and partly because we have a bit of a discrepancy between what information or how fast information comes from daycare and comes from us. And we know that we're working with the same family. So we just want to be super transparent and super clear. And the other thing is Susie and I have learned that it takes two people, Susie and I, about 3 hours to do the first part. So for the school, there's two parts to the whole process. And for the daycare, essentially there's one part. So I don't really know why it's different, but I do know that obviously Susie and I and your kids and Howard are part of a huge organization, whereas the daycare is its own entity. So what happens for us at the school is, if a parent calls and tells us that they have a child who's positive, or likewise if it's a staff member, there's several things that Susie and I try to manage simultaneously, which is why two of us can do it, so or are needed to do it. And so what happens is we think about like the school end and the parent end and Toronto Public Health. So the first thing that happens is one of us calls Toronto Public Health to meet with our liaison worker. So this is a part that the daycare doesn't have. They don't have a specific liaison worker assigned to them, which is a bit unfortunate, but that's a difference. And so what happens is, for example, what we did was Susie called his name is Morris Lowe. He's our Toronto Public Health worker. And we're in the same space. We've got our phones on speaker. If we're at work, if we were at home on the weekend, it would look different, but we'd be doing the same things, but separately. So what we need to do is we need to call Toronto Public Health and talk to that person and do the initial investigation. So we give that person everything we know. And what they're doing is they're saying the initial determination of cohorts being sent home. Now, Susie and I can just send cohorts home. But in doing that, what they mean is we can do it without doing the full investigation, without the communicable disease investigator telling us to send them home, but we're required to do that TPH with our nurse. So then what happened was Susie's talking to that person, and at the same time, I have to put an email together that goes to the health and safety department, the superintendent, the associate director, childcare, if childcare is involved, facilities, and about communications, about four other people. And I send that off to give them the alert. And then what I do is I fill out something which is now daycare. So now daycare can skip that part. Mm-hmm. And daycare, and we both go and fill out what they call a school market survey. So now it's a survey. We fill it out. We put in all the information for the student, all the information we know about the case, and we zoom it in. And then it's assigned to an investigator. And I wish that the daycare and the school would get the same investigator because it's the same students, but that's not the case in all buildings and all daycares and all schools. So they don't do that. So they do it separately. So I'm sending out the information. I'm doing the market surveys. Susie and I together are talking on the phone. Then Susie's putting together an email for staff because we're required to make sure that staff know. And we're getting the initial information from Morris, our nurse. So for example, in this case, he was able to say, okay, what do we know? What do we know about this? What do we know about that? And in all two cases, we've only had two out of the three with daycare, we've compared and we've had the exact same information, which has been great because the parents are fully transparent with both of us. So it's been fabulous. And then in this case, our public health nurse said, yep, the dates of communicability are this. And we're able to initially say, yes, we had these people in the building. And he says, yes, you need to send those kids home pending the full thing. He doesn't make any estimates about when they can come back. He doesn't tell us whether we should tell parents to go for testing or not. And he really doesn't give us any more direction than that. So that's when we start to send all that information out to families. And then both the daycare and I are waiting for our investigators to call back. And so in this case, as what happened last time, and then in this case, just for the daycare, the public health nurse investigators decided that they were gonna investigate to a level where they were just able to tell when the dates of communicability were and make sure that the staff and the students are safe and leave it at that. And then give us a letter or whatever we need to invite families back to school or give them more direction. But in this case, it was interesting because our public health nurse for the school, she said, like, she asked me a whole bunch of questions, but I don't know all of it. I don't know all of the specifics going many layers back. So in this case, she wanted to go many layers back. And she said, so now I'm going to reach out to the family. Whereas the last time on the 11th, she didn't, my understanding is, reach out to the family. She just said, yep, the dates are this and the dates are this. And based on what I was able to tell her and what she was able to determine through Toronto Public Health records when people got their tests, she made that determination that it wasn't of risk to the school. So right now we're just waiting. So both of the public health nurses, the one for us and the one for daycare, sort of took different routes. Both are safe and both are good because both are determining whether when the period of risk was for students and staff and how many days people need to stay home. But because the school's public health nurse is going several more layers, like she just said very clearly, like, I need to go farther with this because I need to find out what the source was, because there was some variables that meant it could have come from this part of the family. It could have come from, you know, this play date. It could have come from other things. So she just said, you know, I need the time to do it. So really, that's what happens. We have the first step, which is the initial investigation, and we're just releasing people to go home or not. But in all three cases, they've asked us to send kids home. And in all three cases, it's definitely, even though on March 11th, the second one, we were pretty sure, like 99% sure, that there was no risk to the school. we made the determination that those children needed to go home because it wasn't confirmed by the full investigation. So it's better for sure, even though we know it's a bit of an inconvenience, to just err on the side of caution and to, you know, give families as much information as possible, but to be on the safe side. So in this case, we're hoping that we'll hear tomorrow. I actually have my phone right beside me in case our health nurse calls now, because we never know what time they're calling. So if I have to excuse myself, that's what I'm doing. So that we're hoping tomorrow we'll get the information out. And so that's kind of why it looks different. But that's also why in this case, our investigation is taking slower, but it could equally just as well happen. Like the next one could be daycares take slower. So I also want everybody to know that daycare and I work very closely. So we meet with each other. We talk about the information we have. We make sure that our investigators are well aware that we share the children between these two organizations and give them information on the other workers if we know who it is so that they can communicate. Because we do think it's very, very important that you get the same message. It may not come at the same time, but that you get the same message. And so I think the other thing just to say is that one of the things that's very important that you know is, for example, in this most recent case, they told us the dates of communicability. And then while I was still working on communications with parents, Susie started getting all, we have lists. We have lists of all the people who sign in. We have all the lists of, we even have lists of where teachers eat lunch and where, you know, teachers go and what they do, and we're checking. And so what Susie was doing was checking, okay, who are our occasional teachers that were in? Did any of them work with that class? Who are the prep teachers? Did any of them work with that class? We've been doing a lot of prep time payback because we've had a high number of teacher absences, like all the schools, and the board and the province just has such a shortage of teachers that we haven't been able to fill absences as they come up. So we have a process where we can call people in at a later date and give teachers their planning time back. So we double check and make sure that those teachers didn't work with that class. So we're very thorough in making sure that we're catching all possible people who could have come in contact with the child. And then the other thing that's important to know is that I have heard people use the term outbreak. So I know that there's definitely a lot of emotion, and Susie and I have been working through that as we get used to this. Like, we're much calmer and much more used to the process, and we're super happy to talk to our investigators and just like pick their brain with all kinds of questions. But what we've had these three times is one isolated case. So at any point it could change, but one isolated case. So an outbreak is really two or more, and it's two or more that are linked through the school. So if for some reason a child comes forward in the next few days and they are sick and they're from one of those cohorts, then they're going to do a thorough investigation and they're going to try to determine, yes, is it linked? And then they're going to watch, and then they're going to determine if there's an outbreak. But I think it's important that that people don't misuse, and this is sort of something I've been working on with staff, don't misuse and think, oh my gosh, there's an outbreak, because we have to be very specific with the terminology. And then, so the other thing there is that just know that we're doing everything as fast as we can, and we have extra steps, which is why we're a bit slower, but that's because we're part of a huge organization and they're being extra careful. And as soon as we get this information, you need to know that everybody in the whole board knows and they're all on top of it and, you know, ready to help. And the trustee knows, and it's all good. And we always do deep cleaning. So for example, in this case, the class that had the case during the school hours had deep cleaning, their room is locked, and before all those children come back, they will have another deep cleaning. So every class gets enhanced cleaning. So in any other year, there's like regular cleaning. Then there's enhanced cleaning that everybody is getting now. And the caretaker walks around twice a day and does all the doorknobs, high touch surfaces, banisters, and everything. And then when we have a case, we do a deep cleaning. So the deep cleaning was done in the three classrooms that were affected with just students being in them, and also the daycare area. And then they'll do another deep clean of that classroom that's locked and nobody's going into. So I have a lot of confidence in the system. I feel like it's working. I feel like it's very responsive. You know, my one little aside would be, I wish that they would give us one person to manage all of daycare and school together. But the daycare is excellent, and we're working on ways of making sure that we're creating the links for public health. So the only thing that I would add to that is a little bit aside, but as I mentioned, is that there's definitely a shortage in the board and in the province of occasional teachers, and I'm sure you hear about it on the news. But I got some information saying that there was discussion that student teachers that are in colleges of university, like colleges of education right now at the universities, doing their Bachelor of Education program, they're going to be graduating soon. They're going to be finishing soon. And as of March 29th, the board is going to give us information on how we can access those people. So rather than them going through the very, very long process and maybe getting on board for September, the board's going to, as of March 29th, allow schools to bring those qualified, they'll be qualified teachers at that point into the building. So I'm looking forward to that, because anything that brings stability and consistency and support in the school is super important. So does anybody have any questions about that? I know it's a lot of information, but and I hope we don't have lots of emails coming out, but it seems timely, seeing as we've had two cases in the last few weeks.
Yeah, does anyone have questions for Esme about the COVID case at the school or anything else that they wanted to ask now? It's a great time to do it.
I know. I have asked our public health nurse, it's a new one. Since we last met, it's still a new one. So the last one was Zaid, and we met with him. He came for a tour, and he could not come to the last school council meeting. And he's since left. And now we have a new person, as I said, Morris Lowe, about five times I said it. And again, he said his mandate, they're just so inundated with things that his mandate is not to come to school council meetings, or actually to come to school staff meetings like our first person did. But he's been very responsive when we called him, so that's good. Susie and I, we had a Toronto Public Health call today. So we're still having our weekly calls with the Associate Medical Officer, Dr. Vanita Dubé. And today she actually gave us some information about COVID cases. And the one thing that I remember was there's about just over 1,300 active cases in the Toronto schools, so public and Catholic. So that I don't know if that's high, I don't know if that's low compared to the number of kids, but I just thought, oh gosh, we're one of them right now. And the other thing I would say is just, you know, like a big thank you. Like we're very confidential about what we know about the cases and the families, but in all of the instances, we've been able to be so productive and so timely and so safe because families have just been so transparent with us, so honest, so open. And I also know with other people they know in the community. So really that's been excellent. So I just thank everybody for doing that.
And Terilyn, I get to say the best part of the night, which is Esme and I want to congratulate you all. We want to congratulate you because of the Parents Reaching Out grant. So we wanted to say that's fabulous. So fabulous. Like, we look forward to when you were able to spend that money and bring in some equity workshops. We can't wait. So really, just to wrap this up and steer it in a different direction, congratulations.
Keep it positive. Yeah. We're keeping it positive.
This is
that was our next agenda item. So.
All right. So I was going to mention something about the playground, but if we're expecting Lee and he's going to give us an update, then I'll let him go with that, because it's some exciting stuff happening.
Yeah, he'll be joining us in probably half an hour or so.
Okay, great.
Yes, so thank you, Esme and Susie. We were fortunate enough to have it brought to our attention. It was short notice a little bit, but there was a grant that was made available through the TDSB called the Parent Reaching Out Grant, ProGrant. That was going to be funds specifically earmarked for equity-based initiatives in schools, specifically around anti-racism, anti-Black education, and awareness around that, anti-Indigenous awareness. And we worked with the Equity Committee to put an application together. It was $1,500, and there were 1,900 applications from different schools. And so I was at a Ward 7 meeting, and they were talking about it. And when I originally had submitted our grant, I'd heard there was just like a few applications, and I thought, we've got a really good chance. And then at the Ward 7 meeting, they said that there was 1,900 applications, and I got a little more nervous. But then the email came through a couple of days later that we had got it. So with our application, we had to be, thank you, yes, we're really excited about it. So especially this year, moving forward, it's going to be really great to be able to have some of these activities that we planned. We had to be very specific with our grant application and really outline what we plan to do. And so in that, we outlined four instances of having virtual seminars with speakers around anti-racism, the history involved in that, and just anti-racism and awareness around racism, and also how to be an anti-racist. So we are going to have these four sessions, hopefully very soon. I know that Midori and Alice are going to be working on finding speakers that are approved through TDSB to do so. And we're hoping to roll them out once a month, or if not, maybe twice a month, one time until the end of the school year. So our timeline is also tight. So you will be getting lots of information about it. We will be giving lots of heads up in advance that these things will be happening. And we really hope that lots of people get involved and sign up, because it's a unique opportunity for us in our school. And I think they're going to be fantastic. Okay, so with that, we are going to move on to a couple other things that Parent Council has been starting to do. We've been thinking a lot about how we're so kind of disconnected right now, and that a lot of the mandate for Parent Council, we haven't been able to act on a lot of those things. We haven't been able to support committees in the same way and have events and support our kids and our teachers the same way we're used to. So we thought that we would offer some virtual seminars. And the first off will be a mindfulness seminar that we're doing early next month or next week. And Jen, I think that you got it all set up, and she found the speaker, and we're really excited about that. So Jen, would you like to just give a little spiel on the mindfulness seminar?
So Sherry Lynn Kirshner she's actually a recently retired teacher. Who teaches mindfulness. She actually hosts a free seminar each month for teachers, where she talks about mindfulness in the classroom, specifically mindful math right now, because I believe mindfulness has been brought into the math curriculum. So they have a lot of great great ideas that they share amongst them for teachers. But she's also written a couple of children's books now, Marvin the Mindful Marmot. She's working on book 3, and she does these mindfulness classes for kids and for families and for teachers. And she's somebody who's been really passionate about it for a number of years. So as an educator and a mindfulness coach, I think this is going to be a great, great seminar for families. I hope some teachers and their families can participate as well, because I think it would be great for them, or at least to bring Sherry Lynn as a resource for them going forward, because I think she has a lot of good materials for teachers as well. But it should be good. So there's one session for JK to grade 3, and then there's another session for 4 to 6. They're very similar, the two different sessions. It's just one might be a little bit more focused towards the younger audience, but similar content.
And that will be on March 29th.
Yeah,
it's Monday. It's already been sent out. We're giving the reminder now again, March 29th, but we will additionally be sending another reminder with a link for the event sign up tomorrow. And you can check your email for that. And if you want us to send you a link, actually, you know what, Sam, would you mind maybe popping the event link into the chat just in case anybody just wants to easily click on it there?
Yeah, very good idea. So there's two links, one for the younger kids and one for the older kids. So I will get those and put them in.
Wonderful, thank you. And then another event that we are going to be starting to plan is to bring in some sort of virtual fitness class. Andrea has been in close contact with Soul Fuel. I'm pretty sure a lot of people in our community are aware of this program. They've been providing a lot of family fitness classes, and they've been very highly rated as well. And so we are going to actually, you know what, our plan had been tonight, if anybody wanted to even like speak about specific interests they might have and age groups for their families, it would really help us to like guide us in selecting the next few things that we do. We would like to do something with fitness, but it would help us to know what the ages are of the kids that would want to participate. Would the parents want to participate too? It would just help us to tailor the programs a little bit more. And so we will keep you guys posted on when those will be rolling out as well. But if there's anybody who wants to chime in now and make a suggestion of something that we could provide, we're all ears. This is for you guys. So that's
Carolyn, it's Alex. So I have my camera off just for the internet right now. I did send an email, but just for the arts committee that I've been sort of MIA for quite a while and back. But I did reach out to Holly Wheatcroft from the Art Room Toronto to see, just tagging on to the mindfulness workshop, you know, would she be available to do something similar online, you know, with using art supplies that families had at home. And she's absolutely willing and able to do that. So, you know, we could decide together, you know, give some suggested themes as well. But she always ties in art history lessons into her art lessons. So she can totally tailor something to the parent community or the school, whole school community, to be able to do something similar like that. So I did get her fee for doing that. You know, she has a set fee and then additional people are, you know, so much money, but I can talk money later, but it wasn't so expensive.
That's great. Yes. And Alexandra, I did get your email. I apologize that I wasn't.
Oh, no. Okay.
But yeah. It is fantastic. And the art room is great. We've signed our kids up for some classes this summer.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
She's, you know, if there's room for her, she's willing to do it. So that would be great.
That would be great. Thank you. Okay, well, if anybody else wants to contribute anything and they're shy to speak, there's always the chat box too, and you can always shoot us an email. I know I say that every meeting, but it's true. With that, I think we will give some time to the graduation committee just to give us an update on that.
Hi, I'm Leslie. I'm sort of, I guess, I pointed myself heading up the graduation committee. and I don't think anyone else from the committee is here, but if someone is, please go off mute and say hello. So I started the graduation committee 2 years ago that year, but last year it was someone else, when my middle child was graduating. And then this year I thought I would do it again because I have a child. My final Howard year is this year. So it's a lot different this time though. Last time I had to recruit a huge group of parents to help with the event, which this year, I don't know. I mean, Esme, please reach out to us if you need us, but I don't know of anything that we're needed for the event. Usually there's a dance and kind of a reception after the actual event ceremony. And so as far as I know, there's not, like, we can't do that because it's in person, of course. We wouldn't be able to do that this year. But if there is anything we need to do for the event and the ceremony, do please reach out to us. Otherwise, we're doing two things, one of which we've already done, which is to order sweatshirts for the kids. And so about all but probably 10 or 8 or 10 of the grade sixes now have these sweatshirts that they proudly wear with their class on the back of it. And we gave one to each teacher as well as a nice gesture.
I saw
them. And they seem to be enjoying them as well.
Yeah, there, I saw a lot of them wearing them today.
Yeah, I saw them, a lot of them wearing them the day they got them, and it was super cute. It was, I was like, oh, Howard.
Yeah.
They love them. They just love them.
I think they do, yeah. And my daughter who's in grade 8 at Fern got one like 2 months ago because the vice principal at Fern does it every year. And I thought, wow, Howard kids would love this. So we just started it this year. And if it's going to get continued, then I'll just pass it on to the next person next year. But yeah, it's the first time for Howard to get the sweatshirts. So then the other thing the graduation committee is doing is the yearbook, which is typically done every year. I did it 2 years ago. And so we're trying to follow the same format as it's typically been, and which is to take the graduation photos after they are taken by the professional photographer. And we should get those on CD, which most photographers do, on CD-ROM. And then we send those off to the yearbook layout folks. And we also will put beside the student pictures some kind of cute questions that the kids answer themselves, which we do pre-read and edit. If needed, we edit them. But essentially, it's really a book for the kids. And so it's got each kid in it with each kid's kind of silly questions that they've answered. And then it has, normally it would have every club, it would have music program and field trips from grade 6, and usually a little bit from previous grades. But this time, instead of having, you know, 6 pages or half of the 12 pages of candidates, won't be those programs. So we'll just fill all those pages with prior years, in addition to candidates from this year, rather than posed photos from this year. So I think we'll still have enough content for the book. And we typically will we'll take the funds that Home and School has for us, which we've already been told what they are. And we will add those funds to a fee that we charge each student for the yearbook. It's something pretty low. It's $20 or something. And then frankly, doesn't matter who pays for it. We just do that to collect the money, and everyone gets a book. Doesn't matter if they pay for it. Everyone gets a book. And so does, you know, like the office and all the grade 6 teachers will get one as well. So we've lined all that up. I think the only outlier in terms of what we don't know for sure is whether the students will have their photos taken at the school this year. And that sort of depends on whether the photographers have a chance to do every school in the time that they're given, which hasn't yet started. So
I can maybe help there a bit. Maybe help. We have a lady, our contact. So as soon as and I heard this on the news too, but I know that what it is that as soon as Toronto goes to the red zone, we're able to do that. There's a number of specific criteria that the photographers need to meet, and they're well aware of it and they're ready. And I've already sent 3 dates. So I've sent them 3 dates, kind of the middle of April, the end of April, and May, kind of trying to spread it out a little bit. So hoping, and I put like things like Mondays and Fridays, which are not school's favorite days to do it, but the chance that maybe there won't be a competition for us. So we just need to kind of like, we're ready and we're at the starting line, and we're going to really do our best to get those kids a photograph, because what happens is we won't be able to get class photos. But what we did last year for the graduates was we got each, you know, they got a composite. So they got a composite of, so each individual photo. So yeah, we're going to do our best to get that done.
Okay, that's great. That's awesome. And then I thought, if we need a contingency plan, if Fern like has theirs scheduled and the photographers can't slot us in, we could potentially get the grade 6s to go down there for an hour if they had to, or vice versa. So I'm in contact with them because I do have a student there, but there's maybe contingencies if we need them, but it sounds like you have everything pretty well in order. So I think that's pretty much it. Are there any questions about the grade six grad committee and what we're doing, and any ideas, please shout them out. If there's anything else we can do, given that normally there's a party, but we can't have one this year.
I think Susie and I will be reaching out to you. We're going to be talking with our grade six teachers because last year we still did the awards, and we weren't supposed to, but we went to Sororin Park and we knew that the kids were going to be there, and we were able to give them out t-shirts and their photos. So we're going to try and see, but we'll reach out and we'll see closer to the time sort of what the scenario is and what we can do, because we definitely want to try to do something that makes them feel like they experienced a milestone and like we're saying goodbye.
We'll connect on the photos, and then in a month or two we'll connect on the other stuff.
Because my question is how could the broader Howard community family contribute to helping the kids feel like they're celebrating a milestone? And I know that the 23rd of June, is it, that the sort of the save the date? So I don't know if it's a matter of just sort of keep it in mind somewhere in the back of your head that we might be going and doing a clap out or something at Sororin Park, or just how could others get involved?
I did hear from some parents saying, are we going to do a clap out? And so I think that's one thing that would really be nice to replace. And it sounds like we could sort of do a copycat from last year and try the Sororin Park clap out. And that would be something that the rest of the community could support because they could go and take part in it. So we'll keep that in mind for sure.
Well, and last year Susie and I did a lot of talking with the grade six teachers, and they were all on board. They were completely on board. So we had pre-made like a virtual graduation. So we had made, graduation speeches. We announced awards. We talked about the winners of the awards. But what we did, we kind of released it at that day, if it's, as you said, I can't remember the exact day, but if it was the 23rd, for example, we would release it. But what we did last time was each of the teachers met with their students. They did a viewing party together, and then they could have their family there. They were doing the viewing party. And then it was after that we met in Sororin Park. So we definitely had the ceremony, but we were not together. But I know that the way we tried to do it was not just here it is, it's posted, everybody can watch on their own time. We tried to make it so that everybody was watching it at the same time. And then at the end, each of the teachers with their classes had a little bit of a gathering, like it was Zoom or Google Meet they were doing, but they had a little bit of, celebration time together. And some of the kids got dressed up for that, and that was really nice. But they spent about 45 minutes after the ceremony, so to speak, together in a virtual environment. So we're going to really try, because it's not going to be the same. But I completely know that, as you know, for the mental health and well-being of the children, they need to have something replace it. They can't just not have it. They need to have something replace it, and they need to have memories and something they can remember and talk about and share and feel like they were part of. So it's not going to be the same, but we know they need something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it'll be memorable for sure with everybody pulling and offering. Yeah.
And, Leslie, also, we can be creative and safe, because fingers crossed, maybe we'll have less kind of structure in June, on June 23rd. But regardless, we'll be creative to still be able to celebrate the milestone, because we want that for everyone, too.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody. Yeah. We'll make it happen.
Thank you, Leslie. I'm just noticing that Arturo had a question for you, Leslie. He's just wondering who designs the grad sweatshirts.
So it was mostly done by the company that does our activewear. Their name escapes me right now, but it's the same company anyway. And then they kind of provided us with a few designs, which the six of us parents on the parent committee just sort of voted. Yeah. So I think the company would be a good company to go with again, but anyone who's thinking of spearheading the sweatshirts in a future year is more than welcome to take creative license.
Okay. Thank you so much for the update on that. You know, thinking about what we have to deal with this year, parent council at our last exec meeting was discussing how exciting it is to think about next year, and with the vaccines rolling out and everything, and how school will look next year. And we want to lay down a little bit of work now in order to make sure that some of the things we might have missed out on this year can be done next year. And a big one is fall FET. Now, last year we had amazing planners for fall FET. Olivia, you were just exceptional, and you've done it for many years, and they want to pass the torch. And so we've put a call out, but we've had that call out for a long time for a volunteer to take over fall FET. And so we're going to put the call out again. It's a big cash cow for council, to put it bluntly. It's a major way for us to build revenue, and our community really loves it. I know my kids would love to see those bouncy castles back in the brand new field for next year. So if anyone is thinking that maybe they want to get involved with council or at the school, we really are in need of somebody to take on that role, and please, please reach out. Otherwise, we're going to have to hunt somebody down and make them do it, because we really want to see that back. And then also, we need someone to take over for the parent social as well. Parent social was another really great source of revenue for council, which supports a lot of different activities and initiatives at the school in better times. And if we want to be able to have the money to be able to do those things, we need to be also having these activities like fall FET and the parent social. So yes.
Yeah, I mean, Leslie had to step away to get the kids to bed. Yeah. But I can say from being treasurer last year, when things were a little bit more normal, we really, like, between fall FET, the auction that happens during the spring social, the social itself, and the direct ask campaign, that's where we get our money from. So with us only really having the direct ask campaign, we're really at a quarter of our capacity in terms of what we can do to support activities at the school.
Great, thank you.
So we need people who could take these things on. And I know that we've talked about it as the executive committee, but the fall FET, they basically knew they were going to stop doing it, so they created a binder that literally all you have to do is turn the pages of the binder and it's all there, all the suppliers, all the how-tos, all the checklists. Mm-hmm. So they've made it really, really easy for somebody to pick it up and run with it and make it their own.
Yeah. So that's my pitch. Turnkey position. It's ready to go, and you can take all the glory as well, because everyone loves the fall FET. So yes. Again, reach out to parent council, reach out to me, Sam, anybody. We would really love to be hearing from some volunteers for those positions. Okay, I see that Lee has joined us, and we are so happy to have him. He's going to give us an update on the playground, another great thing to look forward to for next year.
Thanks a lot, Terilyn. So I see that a lot of people are here who are involved in the playground already. So if anyone has any questions, just ask me. I'll tell you the best update that I can at the moment. We're in tomorrow. We have the final design meeting for the playground planning with the board and the landscape architect that the board's hired to draw out plans. That will result in a tender that officially goes out in early April, and it'll be on a public tender site for about 2 weeks, and then we'll close the tender and see if they get good bids and hopefully a lot of bids. The tender will include a completion date, likely sometime in the fall. They haven't told us yet. And then it's up to the successful bidders to meet the completion date, but get construction done when, however they kind of see fit. I was a little bit caught off guard. Thanks, Susie and Esme, for letting me know. I was telling everyone that who asked, like, no, this isn't schoolyard construction. The trucks that were there today, and all this activity that was going on in the yard, but apparently construction. And Susie can tell you better what it is exactly. I think they were scraping the wall just south of the field, in between the field and the basketball courts, to see if it was in good shape. And there's a couple other drainage things that I think they need information to put in the tender. And aside from that, I can't think of anything. It's all very exciting. I think it's shaping up to look really good. I think the plans that we've seen so far are gonna, I think, be really add a real kind of nice new ambiance to the yard, and I think everyone's gonna be really happy with it.
Thanks, Lee. And listen, I'm sorry for the surprise. You've been the best communicator throughout this entire process. We really don't know what we'd do without your amazing communication skills. And the one time we needed to communicate with you that we had boring into the soil and drainage and checking the wall and I guess the backfilling and the engineer looking to see how viable the wall is, you found out from a tweet. So my public apology that your wife tell you about the
tweet. I got teased by my wife. So I don't know. I'll get you back. So I'll find a way to get you back.
So thanks. That's great. Yeah, thanks. It's been fabulous for us all working together, and we're looking forward to tomorrow for sure.
Does anyone else who's on this call, does anyone have any questions? Awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Lee. I appreciate
you
coming on. Lee, I know we talked about it, but if anybody out there, I'm just going to throw it out there. We are currently looking for the Pantone color that most closely represents Howard Blue. And if there is anybody who knows more about this than we do, we would really appreciate hearing from it.
I might be able to help.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you. I have something somewhere.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I heard some talk when I came on about sweatshirts. If the person doing the sweatshirts, maybe they have it. Yeah. Or they know the color they're using for the sweatshirts. Maybe we can check them.
Kathy Narroway might know because she's worked with Axis Gear for many, many years. And so that would be my next suggestion to reach out to her.
Why don't you leave it with me and I'll connect with Kathy. Who needs to know the Pantone?
Lee does.
Okay. Yeah. All right. An excuse to call Lee. I got it.
Awesome. Okay. So thanks again, Lee.
Thank you.
We've only got one more line item here, and it's also in addition to all the discussion we have about gearing up for the next school year, and that council's just trying to discuss alternative ways for us to be doing fundraising. Obviously this year we were a bit cut off at the knees in terms of some of that, and you know, we also had the playground fundraising, which you know, for very good reasons took a lot of that money, and so we were kind of wanting to ask the community how receptive you might be to another direct ask campaign. Are you a little bit tapped out, or do we see it as something that could be productive? And we just kind of wanted to gauge reception to that. And Sam, I can see that you want to add something. Go for it. You're on mute.
I know. Having seen the books so closely, I know the value it can add. And from a communications point of view, I like the idea that a direct ask campaign goes out digitally. The people who want to come forward and make a donation can do so. People who aren't in a position to do so or haven't got the inclination to do so, nobody will ever know. So it's sort of in that respect, it's kind of ideal. There's no shame in ignoring the email.
I agree. I think that we're going to find ourselves behind in the fall. I know a lot of people don't want to be asked right now, and there's no harm in asking. As Samantha said, if you don't want to, and we see what the response is, maybe just trying to be a little more targeted. Like we need to support Fall FET and how important it is, and like all the reasons why we're doing it. So that in the fall, because we don't have a lot of money left, because we haven't been able to raise any money, saying we would like to be on some good footing so that we can fund all the things that we've done in the past, and just putting together a well thought out email just saying this is why we're doing it. And again, I understand everyone's in different positions, but this is why we're asking. And I don't know if we should put a target in or that, but I definitely think we should. I was thinking May.
So Leslie, Alfredo's asked a good question. How much money do we need to raise to be on track for the fall?
That is an excellent question.
Last year, maybe you actually.
Samantha, would you have
in a normal year?
Yeah.
We would have a nice, we'd have $10,000 in the bank that we could carry over from one year to the next.
Right.
In case something comes up that the school doesn't have funds for. Generally, the funds that we need are funds that get used for the committee's projects. So for instance, if we realize that we don't have the Chromebooks or iPads that we need in the fall, or that we've 50% of the cables have deteriorated and need to be replaced, and the money that we would raise would top up whatever the school doesn't have funds for. Fall FET, we have to prepay for a lot of that stuff, whether it's insurance or rental fees or whatever it may be, dump tanks. So we have to put forward, just saying, we have to put that money forward, and then we get reimbursed for it. May we have a musical again someday? There are expenses that need to get paid up front. The Lion King script cost a fortune. Mm-hmm. And so just to give examples of expenses that come to us before we're able to do a cost recovery on them. And then we have really lovely ideas and ambitions for different wellness rooms on different floors. And the council, the parent committee, and the fundraising from the community would have provided for a lot of that stuff.
So we also have an interesting year, and Esme, we've talked about it previously, Esme has touched on it, is that with the tech and equity committees, that it's going to be a little bit more covered for the short time, and that's where asking parents for that this year, I'm not sure, that's where we need to be specific in what we're asking for, and if it is for tech, and Esme can touch at that, but I think we're covered there for what we want for now.
Yeah, so we had a budget meeting recently with the staff, and we are going to take about $13,000 from our carryover from last year to put towards replacing Chromebooks and iPads from last year. So what we would like to do is slowly but surely keep building on replacing all of the great technology that we had, but that we lost because they were distributed through the stay-at-home periods. So the board is kind of bits and pieces. They're giving us not money, but they're giving us the product. So for example, I believe In the fall, we got 18, if I'm correct. I don't know if it was more, Susie would know, but they gave us, like, they just showed up. So they're gently just sort of replenishing everybody. And what we need to do as a school is have like a long-term plan so that we can get more and recover and then keep what is getting old in the right state, like replace it as it comes up. So we've decided we're going to take $13,000 approximately. And that would give us either about 30 Chromebooks, and maybe 2 carts of iPads. Yeah, because we identified that as one of our priorities, absolutely, for the school, because it needs to just go, we need to get what the kids need.
Mm-hmm. And as some of the replenished Chromebooks that did come in slowly in the fall and just before the winter break, we distributed a small handful of those to a small handful to teachers and a small handful to some families. So there's probably about 15 that were distributed. So initially we did get about 18. We distributed 15 before the holidays. And then we got another little bit of replenishment, about another 18. So we do have on loan a good 12 of the first group that were replenished from TDSB. So it's a bit of a give and take this year.
That's good. I'm seeing some questions in the chat. So David Burney, thank you for this. You said that I'm supportive of a direct ask fundraising campaign. There are some fortunate families who will be in the position to give, and much better than something like a magazine drive. It's true. I mean, a direct ask is we get dollar for dollar everything that is donated to us. And it is the most effective. And so definitely if the community is receptive, we will definitely be doing that again with specific tasks in mind and specific fundraising goals laid out. Is there anything else, Sam, that you wanted to add to that, or Leslie?
No, and there was the one question about how much we can ask for. We can ask for as much as we want, as long as you can put it towards something. We want to waste $100,000. Sure. What are we doing it for? So, no, yeah.
And in terms of carrying money over from year to year, there aren't any limits. And one of the sensitivities, of course, is our grade 6 grads. You know,
yeah, those no, families for sure.
that are exiting the school, we want to be sensitive to that. But yeah. No, if they feel compelled to have a legacy gift, by all means.
Oh, yeah.
Send it our way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wanted to say, like, the point I was going to bring up, Terilyn, was about the magazine and similar campaigns like chocolate bars and stuff like that, that for a kid, it can be kind of fun. You're door to door. You're doing a thing. But the school, like the fraction, like I think it was 13 cents on the dollar with the QSP campaign. Like it really doesn't have the same impact that a direct ask campaign has, for sure. And you can get a tax receipt too.
And I think that can be communicated of that, why we're doing it this way. Cause some people may not like it or whatever, but being like, this is why we're doing it this way, because it's the most cost effective, it's most bang for our buck. Like other campaigns are great, but this is the most effective way to support the school.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it also makes sense given the pandemic, you know, like you can't go door to door to sell magazines and chocolate bars, whatever. So it's just, I think you can layer in messaging around the pandemic as well. That's why we're doing it. I do think that if there's a specific need that we can be calling out, you know, are there specific things that we need to raise money for? I'm just curious, maybe it was mentioned already, but you know, if there was a set of things that we as a community want to rally around to do, I think that would be even more helpful.
Well, I think, David, it's been a lot around the things that we weren't able to do this year, which generally fund the activities that we sponsor, and that even just to get ourselves off the ground to do those activities again next year, like say Fall Fete, that I know has been mentioned, but we have to put deposits down on things ahead of time. It might make us a lot of money and it's a good ROI, but it's still money that we have to spend first, and we need to have the funds to do so. So it's stuff like that. We're trying to look forward to the future and to be kind of back to normal again outside of COVID times. And what funding do we need to be able to have those activities back again?
I think one of the things I would add here is that definitely they, you know, school council in my time here has always been very generous about technology, very supportive of technology, and we're really kind of behind the eight ball with technology. And also, as you said, the musical, and there, you know, I mean, lots of things that we may be able to get back to by the end of next year, but like busing for field trips, busing for tournaments, things like that. But the other thing is that we've always, in my experience, enjoyed and been privileged to have as a school is a really great arts program. So there's, you know, we may not be able to have a visiting artist, but maybe as Alexandra said, maybe we can have somebody come and visit each of the classes over a couple of days and do some work with them. So I think that once we have funding back for those things, there's definitely a lot of enrichment things that we can do with the kids in the classrooms, even if it's virtual. So I think there's definitely things that we have not been able to have, which we know because we've been collecting for the field, but we've also been in such a transition time, and I expect next year to be a little bit better, or at least we'll be able to better facilitate virtual support for the kids and virtual enrichment, like a visiting storyteller or a visiting artist, and school council's always been really generous with the funds for those.
Yeah. So one of the things that we can do in our messaging, to Dave's point, is to be really specific about where those funds go, and, you know, what will be possible versus what we would lose if we didn't have the resources to do it. But yeah, to be as specific as possible, because there is also a field in the whole process where you can articulate where you would like the money to go. So whoever's making the donation does have a certain degree of say. Not 100%, but a certain degree of say. It's like, hey, no, I want this to go to arts. I want this to go to tech. That is possible.
Yeah. Scientist in the school is another great example of something that all the classes had equal access to. Yeah.
There's a bunch of
enrichment things you've done for the kids.
Yeah. We look forward to being able to do them again very soon. On a smaller scale, you know, council with the minimal budget that we have we've been trying to do certain things like the mindfulness seminar and other activities that we plan in the next little while. And this week too, it was small, but it was raised to our attention that the crayon supply in a lot of the classrooms maybe wasn't providing enough various skin color representation for the kids. And so some of the kids were getting a little creative, and we thought, well, this isn't like, there are whole boxes that you can get of crayons with all different color skin tones. And so council, Leslie and Jen organized it with Scooter Girl, who gave us a really nice discount. And we went and bought a bunch of boxes of, I think, is it called Colors of the World? Forgive me if I'm wrong. I think the Crayola box is like specifically a box of different skin colors, and we've made that available to the school. So I think
we just need to we're dropping them off tomorrow. We just wanted to confirm with Esme where we should take those. Right.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so you know what? Either the front or the back door, and Susie and I will come pick them up from you. And then what we'll do is we'll put them in the, you know, our office kitchen, and then we'll distribute them to the teachers. That's exciting. Thank you. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Leslie,
multicultural crayons. And sorry, I just went to go grab it, and I'm having some child issues. Sorry, I'll drop them off with you tomorrow morning.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Yeah. Come to the front door, come to the back door, and we'll come and get them from you. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it was something small, but we thought this is okay.
I like it. Thank you.
And so I think we bought quite a bit. We bought quite a few boxes. And so it wasn't just to like supply them to the classrooms right now, but to also have like a stock so that in the future we can dip into that as well. Okay. So sorry, I'm just reading through chats here.
Now, there've been some lovely comments about the direct ask. And I was just wondering, you know, like if you can put yourself in the minds of people who might be less receptive,
yeah.
What are some of the objections they might have so that I could write something ahead of time to sort of address those concerns. So if you think of anything that you may have heard or caught wind of something that I could preemptively address, that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's great. Thank you. Well, that concludes the meeting. If there is anything else that anybody wants to add right now.
I do have a question.
Hi, yes.
Hi, this is for Esme and Susie. I just wanted to understand at what grade do they start using those Chromebooks that you mentioned? I just have my little one on Escapad.
That's a wonderful question. So typically in our school, the teachers that are teaching junior kindergarten, senior kindergarten, grade one and grade two really like the iPads. So they find that the iPads are more compatible for that age group. They also find that the learning tools on the iPads and the apps really, really work with their programming and their curriculum. So it matches up really well and it matches up with the developmental stage of the children. And so really typically the Chromebooks, they're used extremely regularly and as part of the whole program. Like it's really literacy weaved through everything. The Chromebooks help for everything, but really in the junior grades. So I would say that they are used on a regular daily basis, grade 4, 5, and 6 at Howard. Of course, okay. The grade 3s have access always, but it's in the fall, it's a bit of slow going. Because students up until now, I mean, now thanks to all of you and the place we've been in this year with having to have a Google Classroom platform, you all have access to your student TDSB accounts. But really up until now, teachers have been accessing the student TDSB accounts, probably in grade 3 is when we kind of start doing and teaching children how to access that. So I do think it'll be a little earlier than it has been in the past, but really iPads for the primaries and the Chromebooks are used really well for the juniors. I don't know if there's anything I missed there that maybe we wanted to add, but.
Yeah, well, I would just add everything you said is absolutely what's happening. I would just add that when we have a lot of coding packages like Osmo and Lego, we do. So we have a lot of coding items and they work much better with the iPads. So the only time I would say the junior grade, say 3 and up, use the iPads is if they're doing coding. But primarily, as Susie said, it's the little ones that are using the iPads because they're mobile, they're easier. We've got them in little things that if they drop them, like the cases are like big and fat and they won't break them. And then the junior grades from 3 and up, they're much better at typing, they're much better at manipulating and researching and writing and blogging. So it's basically that. But what happens is we right now, because we don't have as much as we used to, it's on a sign out basis. Plus we have to remember about letting things sit and not be, you know, contaminated and reused by other people immediately after and those kind of things. So it's a bit limited, but they're a huge part of all of our programs. The teachers love them. The teachers are comfortable and the kids love them too.
Interesting. Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Okay, well, if there's no more questions, that concludes everything that we had on the agenda tonight. I just want to thank everyone once again for coming and taking the time out of your busy schedules and your time with your family to be here. Esme and Susie, especially, thank you for joining. And we will see you all next month. Now, Sam, I am just blanking on next month's date. Do we have that set already?
You're asking me. Oh dear. Third Wednesday, whatever that ends up being in April.
Bear with me. I'm pulling my calendar.
I know.
I should.
That's not during the new March break, is it?
It is. So we will reach out.
Yeah.
We'll have to set a new date.
We will propose for April's. Yeah.
April. Oh, I can jump in. It's not the.
It's the 21st.
It's the 21st. Right. Okay.
Okay.
So thank April 21st. Apologies. April 21st. Yes. Okay. There we go. April 21st will be the next meeting at 7 p.m. An agenda and meeting links will be sent out ahead of that. And as always, if there are any questions about the meeting tonight, or if there's anyone watching it recorded and you have anything you want to add, always feel free to reach out to one of us on the exec committee or Esme or Susie. And we're happy to hear from you and answer your questions.
So just as a, like, as a, something for an agenda and something we probably should put up before and we can talk to, is that the direct ask campaign should probably be a focus of that.
Yes, meeting. I would agree. That's a fantastic
suggestion. That would be so we can be ready for May and have ideas.
We've been discussing, and what Sam's been really kind of digging for here, is that we need to really focus our wording and the messaging
around it. I agree.
And it's true. Tailor it to those naysayers or people who might be opposed to it or have an issue with it, and see what we can do to explain it more and have even more people on side.
Positive. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
It also gives us a chance to look forward to next year too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of it, like you're talking about the Chromebooks, and I'm like, oh, we need our STEM committee back, right? Like that's another one that's really fallen by the wayside. So engaging as many people as we can in order to have a good team set up for next year.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody. And on that note,
good night.
Thank you.
Thank you all, Rosie.
Bye.